And one more. The bare branches of the cherry tree outside scratch at the half-open windowpane with every gust of wind, every breath of autumn breeze. It's an irregular, arrhythmic noise, grating and uneven, and it drags Yennefer into wakefulness much earlier than she'd like. She pushes her hair out of her eyes and glares at the offending window, momentarily wondering whether she can justifiably draw on her chaos to pull it without getting out of bed. It's too early for that kind of focus, though. So she sighs, moves Yaskir's arm from around her waist, and slips out from under the covers. He shifts a little in his sleep, forehead furrowing, empty hand flexing against the sheets. But then Geralt unconsciously curls tighter around him, breathing even, forehead pressed safe and secure to the back of Yaskir's neck. Yaskir quiets, and Yennefer can't help but smile. She pads naked across the soft rugs and the hardwood floors of Yaskir's Oxenfurt bedroom, pulls the window shut, and stands at the sill for a moment, looking out over the grassy quads and golden stone of Oxenfurt. It's late autumn, the trees dripping with red-gold leaves, and the air carrying just the faintest hint of the chill of winter proper, and Yennefer watches a pair of students scurry along the path to the library, wrapped up warm in scarves and cloaks, piles of books and papers in their arms. She wonders if they're Yaskir students, but they turn into the library before she can get a glimpse of their faces. There's a jug of apple juice sitting on Yaskir's desk, perched between a pile of half-corrected student compositions and a couple of pages of Yaskir's own poetry. The original lines scribbled over and scratched out and reworked more times than Yennefer can make out. Quiet as she can, Yennefer pads to the desk and pours herself a cup of juice, sips it slowly as she thumbs through the half-finished poems, reading a word here, a few lines there. Most of it seems to be some epic tale of two mythological lovers, whose name Yennefer vaguely recognizes, clearly loaded with intellectual in-jokes and complex allusions, but she has no time for that kind of academic game-playing this early in the morning. She puts them to one side, sips the apple juice, and picks up a lone sheet of paper, not quite as covered in Yaskir's scribbling as the others. It's barely a few lines, in fact, and Yennefer reads them absently, only half paying attention. Then she pauses, frowns, and reads them again. Is this twilight? Is this ending? Is this all my time unbending? Rivers flow, leaves turn gold, evening fades to darkness cold. My song is sung, my race is run. All I am is done, undone. A cold hand closes around Yennefer's heart. She sets the apple juice down with a hand that's oddly shaky and looks back to the bed. Geralt is wrapped around Yaskir, arm around his waist, legs tangled together beneath the expensive blankets that were a birthday gift from Ciri a few summers ago. And the two of them are as noisy and disruptive as ever in their sleep. Yaskir snoring, Geralt twitching every few moments, an irritatingly loud symphony that Yennefer has spent years now figuring out how to sleep through. Geralt is the same as he's ever been, silver-white hair splayed out across the pillows, maybe a few more scars here and there. And Yaskir is no different to how he was yesterday. He hasn't changed while they slept. No, he is the same as he was last night when Yennefer watched him laugh and choke and gasp and fall apart. Yennefer takes a wavering step towards the bed, his poem clutched in her hand. There's gray in Yaskir's hair. This isn't a new thing, of course. Yennefer has been mocking him for it for the last few years, winding her fingertips around the silvering strands and pointing them out in every mirror they pass. He takes her teasing with a roll of his eyes and an answering jab about her outfit or her hairstyle or her fixation on wearing the same perfume every day for the last 100 years or however old you are, my naiad. Gods, you're lucky I'm into older women. And then the conversation segues into other things, lighter things. And that means that Yennefer has never really consciously thought about it, about the gray in his hair, about the lines around his eyes, about the pair of carefully polished eyeglasses that sit on top of the half-marked compositions on his desk. My song is sung, Yaskir wrote. My race is run. Yaskir is human, and therefore mortal. Yennefer knows this. Of course she knows this. He is a fragile, insignificant mortal caught between a witch and a witcher. And maybe that's why he always ends up sleeping between her and Geralt, because they both feel that deep, aching need to keep him safe. And Yennefer knows that she will always keep him safe, that she will strike down any fucker who dares touch what's hers. But there are some things she can't keep him safe from. Humans are mortal. They get old, and they slow, and they die. That's just what they do. Their lives are short and bright, and they burn out so quickly. Mayflies dancing in the twilight. Not him. Oh, not him. All of a sudden, Yennefer can't be here anymore. She finds her dress, thrown haphazardly over the back of a chair in the flurry of last night, and she pulls it on, her hands trembling as she fumbles through the buttons and the hooks and the laces. Gods! Why do her clothes have to be so complicated? Her cloak is in the main room of Yaskir's suite, she knows, along with her shoes. But her stockings, where are her fucking stockings? She searches for a moment until she finds them, tangled up with Geralt's trousers, shoved half under the bed. Ian? Geralt's peering up at her, eyes half-lidded, a little bleary, as loose and relaxed as she's ever seen him outside of Kaer Morhen. Yaskir sleeps on in his arms, dead to the world. Yennefer slips her stockings on, flashes Geralt as much of a smile as she can manage. Go back to sleep. Geralt shifts, props himself up on one elbow, and pain flashes through Yennefer's heart as Yaskir stirs, burrowing deeper under the blankets. He doesn't wake, thank all the gods. Why are you dressed, Ian? Geralt asks, his voice thick with sleep. I have been called away, Yennefer says, soft as she can. And the lie is bitter on her tongue, but it's all she can bring herself to say right now. I didn't want to wake you. Do you need help? Geralt asks, worry creeping into his half-awake voice. I can go back to sleep, Yennefer says, firmer, then steals herself and nods to Yaskir, snoring softly, his face buried in the pillows. I won't be here for his recital tomorrow, so you'll have to pretend to be interested in Redanian balladry for both of us. Geralt groans, but lowers himself back down to the warmth of the bed. Be safe, Ian, he murmurs, drawing Yaskir back into his arms. Graying hair and thinning skin and fading eyesight, all of him, all of his fragility, all his frailty. Yaskir interrupts his quiet snores long enough to let out a soft sigh of contentment, his sleeping face turning toward Geralt like a flower seeking the sun. Geralt murmurs something too soft for Yennefer to hear, buries his face in Yaskir's hair, and goes back to sleep. Anything else Yennefer might say dies in her throat. She goes, takes a horse from the academy stables, and rides. It takes her a few days to reach Novigrad on horseback, by which time she has just about managed to quell the overriding impulse to rip the world to shreds around her until it bends to her whim. She goes to her house, leaves the dripping, panting stallion to the small staff who maintain the place when she's not around, and goes straight to her library, pulls a dozen volumes off the shelves and piles them on the reading desk. She pauses for a few moments when her housekeeper, a short, red-cheeked woman named Roxana, comes in, wraps out orders for food, drink, and peace and fucking quiet, then settles herself at the desk and starts to read. She starts with the basic, the Ars Magica, alongside Rhysharon Monk's Natural Magic. Neither of them gets her anywhere significant, although there are a few footnotes that direct her to other sources that might be of interest. She finds a scrap of parchment, scribbles down the names. A brief skim of the arcane mysteries of magic and alchemy proves that the damn thing is as useless as always, probably because Lunan and Tears were men, and mortal men at that. God, she doesn't know why she even keeps this fucking thing around. It would be more useful as a bloody doorstop. Yennefer shoves it off the desk with a thud, and is interrupted briefly by Roxana carrying a plate of suckling pig and a glass of Estest. Except, no, gods, no. She shakes her head at the Estest, asks for water, so she has to keep a clear head because she can't think about that night in Vizima all those years ago. The weight of the bottle of Estest in Yaskir's hand, the brightness of his smile, the richness of his laugh. Yennefer buries herself in the Liber Tenebratum, and Jocelyn's A History of Mortal Magic finds very little, then tries Monk's The Magic of the Elderfolk. Which, fuck, did she really think this was going to help? This isn't about the Elderfolk and their magic. It isn't about elves or fae or any of the other half-legendary races that Yennefer still isn't entirely sure she believes in. This is about Yaskir. This is about saving Yaskir. Yennefer takes a shaky breath and reads on into the night. The Annals of Aldous, Sorcerer of Lyria and Magician of Banard. A few intriguing footnotes and a single page debunking a ritual that the Grandmothers of Skellig swear by. Yennefer adds it to the pile with Natural Magic and Ars Magica. Liber Mortalium Immortaliumque. A fucking poetry collection! Why does she have a fucking poetry collection? She throws it on top of Arcane Mysteries. The End of Life. A medical textbook which Yennefer initially dismisses as more relevant to the scholars in the medical faculty at Oxenford. But it has an interesting afterword, written by a sorceress who, by the sounds of it, owed the Dean of Medicine a favor. The afterword speaks of mortality, of death and dying, and of those who can overcome it. Sorcerers and elves and witchers, and the other mutants, freaks, and outcasts that human society likes to shun. It's a daring essay for such a textbook, and Yennefer finds herself oddly fascinated. But then she reads the last paragraph, and her fingers spasm tight around the book's pages. The search for immortality has occupied the great thinkers of humankind for centuries past, and will occupy them for centuries to come, the sorceress writes. None have yet managed to solve the central problem, chaos. It has been shown that all those who have some degree of longevity or potential immortality, I speak in particular of elves, of magic users, and of those mutated humans that the common folk call witchers, are beholden to chaos, imbued with it in some essential way. The conclusion that must be drawn, therefore, is that chaos is the key to any potential solution to human mortality. Bullshit, Yennefer says to the silence of the library, and slams the book shut. Yaskir doesn't have a drop of chaos in him. It's the small hours of the morning by the time Yennefer's eyes finally grow so heavy that she has to rest. She sleeps for a few hours, wakes before dawn, then goes back to the books, wrapped in a worn old dress that isn't fit for public presentation, but is eminently comfortable and perfect for this kind of research. Roxana brings in breakfast, smoked kippers and fresh bread, a mug of herbal tea, and, offered with a pause, a small glass of whiskey. Yennefer accepts with a soft, apologetic thanks. Any correspondence? A few letters, Roxana says, settling them down on the desk next to her. Do you know how long you'll be staying with us, Madame Yennefer? Only a few days, I expect, Yennefer says, her lips tight. If I don't find what I need here, I'll need to take my business to Aretusa, maybe even Banard. Shall I send word for them to expect you? Roxana asks. Yennefer looks back to her books for a moment, to the tower of useless tomes that's built up on top of Arcane Mysteries, to the significantly smaller pile of volumes with a minor footnote or a few paragraphs that might help, and feels nervy, anxious fear scraping at her gut. Yes, she says. And tell them I'll need access to the libraries. Roxana nods and leads her to it. Yennefer spends 3 days in her Novigrad lodgings, barely leaving her library for a few scant hours of sleep a night. And by the time she's done, there are barely a handful of books left on the shelves. The rest are scattered around the library in a series of complex, intricate piles. And for a moment, she considers putting them back before she leaves, devoting a few hours to making sure that everything's in its place. But she doesn't have time. There's a long list of books that she needs to consult, of avenues she needs to explore, along with a small sheaf of notes that she's taken so far. Notes on names of rituals, of elixirs, of ancient alchemists and human inventors. And maybe it will all come to nothing, but it's something. She has to do something. The dress she wore in Oxenfurt is still sitting in a heap on the floor of her bedroom. Normally, it would have been tidied away by the maid days ago, but Yennefer sent the staff home that first morning back, not wanting anything by way of distraction. She picks it up off the floor with a sigh, drapes it over the back of the chair set in front of her dressing table, and freezes as a small scrap of paper flutters to the floor, folded and creased, crumpled and worn. Yennefer's heart twists in her chest. She should leave it. She should have fucking left it on Yaskir's desk in the first place. But it was in her hand as she fled Yaskir's rooms. In her hand as she fled the academy. In her hand as she rode out of Oxenfurt as fast as her horse could carry her. She barely even noticed that it was there until the sun was high in the sky. And then she folded it up tight, pushed it into her pocket, and did her best to forget about it. But she can't forget. She can't. Yennefer bends down, picks up the paper, smooths it out. All I am is done, undone. Yennefer folds the poem neatly, precisely, and tucks it into her half-packed traveling bag, along with her own sheaf of notes. She spends one more night in Novigrad, and despite the bitterness in her heart, the roughness in her gut, she sleeps like a log. She sleeps the deep, dreamless sleep of the utterly exhausted. And when she wakes, she doesn't feel refreshed, per se, but she feels motivated, determined. She knows what she has to do, and she knows where she has to go to do it. Yennefer spends a fortnight in the archives at Aretusa, fingers stained with ink and book dust settling in the lining of her clothes. She doesn't find what she needs, so she goes to Bannard, loses herself in the sorcerer's library, pisses off the librarian with her perfumes and her disdain for his shelf mark system. She doesn't find what she needs, so she goes to Oxenfurt. By now, it's late enough in the year that Yaskir will have gone with Geralt to Camorin, so she won't run into him in the cloisters, won't hear his voice echoing across the quads. She can wrap herself up in the libraries and the scholars, search through their obscure, arcane histories, the volumes of magical histories that Desea would murder to get her hands on. She doesn't find what she needs. But there are other collections, other pools of knowledge. Of course she's not going to find an answer in the schools and the academies. No, of course not. Nowhere that mainstream will have the information she needs. So she goes elsewhere. To black market collections, to forbidden histories, to men with greasy hands and women with daggers hidden in their skirts. She pays what she needs to pay. She bribes who she has to bribe. She threatens who she has to threaten. She reads of banned magics, rituals of death and torture, fanciful spells dreamed up by disturbed minds, legends and artifacts, and all kinds of bullshit that doesn't exist, could never exist. But every time she turns a page, there's hope. Every time she opens a new book, there's hope. Autumn fades into winter, and winter fades into spring. Yennefer doesn't find what she needs. The days are warm and long, the sky is hot and blue, when Yennefer opens a portal to Camorin. Messener finds her in his library, uninvited, elbow deep in a pile of tattered old scrolls that crumble at the edges a little more every time she touches them. "Yennefer," he snaps, a fire alight in his eyes that she's never seen before.
"What in the name of all the gods do you think you're doing?"
"Research," Yennefer answers, short and sharp, because she does not have time for this. Vesemir snatches the scrolls out of her hand, surprisingly fast for an old man, and yet remarkably careful, astonishingly gentle, cradling the crumbling things in his deadly hands.
"You cannot read these, witch," he says, and,
oh, it's been a long time since a witcher called her witch in anger.
"These are not for you."
"They were written by members of the Brotherhood," Yennefer says tightly, her fingers closing on empty air.
"Or their predecessors, at least. They are as much mine as they are yours." "They are not yours,"
Vesemir practically roars. And Yennefer has seen the old witcher angry before, seen him frustrated and irritated and flat-out pissed off, but she's never seen him furious like this. He slams his palm down on the desk next to her, his unweaned strength reverberating through the wood.
"You are permitted through our wards because you are our friend," he grits out,
ill eyes flashing with fury.
"You are permitted to winter here because you are as much a parent to Cirilla as Geralt is. But you are not permitted to simply use these records for research, like they are some academic curiosity. Do you even know what they are?"
"They are how you were made," Yennefer snaps back, on her feet before she really knows what she's doing. Chaos crackles across her skin, unbidden. "These scrolls tell of how you witchers were created, Vesemir, of how your lives are stretched out beyond the span of human years." Her voice cracks, just a little, and Vesemir's expression stills. His eyes are bright and piercing. "There are gaps in the formula," Yennefer pushes onward. "And it's clearly an early draft of whatever final concoction that they pumped you with in the trials, but if I can..."
"The secret is lost, Yennefer,"
Vesemir says, his voice oddly calm.
"We cannot make more witchers."
Yennefer shakes her head.
"I don't want to make more witchers,"
she says, tight and breaking. "Gods, no! More idealistic, irritating monster hunters! That's the last thing I want!" She knows it's insensitive even as the words spill from her lips, but she can't stop. She blunders onwards.
"All I need is longevity, Vesemir. One part of your witcher mutations, and not even the most dangerous. With the formula in those scrolls, and with the certain texts I've seen at Bernard, I think I can..." "You can't save him,"
Vesemir interrupts. Yennefer's heart goes cold.
"Excuse me?"
"You're barred,"
Vesemir says, and his words are surprisingly soft.
"You can't save him, Yennefer.
Not from this. Not like this."
Yennefer takes a step away from him, not quite able to stop her lips baring in a snarl.
"You don't know what you're talking about,"
she snaps, high and arrogant. Vesemir's gaze is flat and unrelenting.
"You think you're the first of that songbird's lovers I found frantically rooting through these records?"
he asks, carefully setting the crumbling scrolls back down on the desk between them.
"Geralt stood where you stand years ago, and I told him then what I'll tell you now. It cannot be done."
"Vesemir!"
"The trials killed 7 out of every 10 boys that went through them,"
Vesemir says flatly.
"And they were boys, Yennefer. Young and strong. Trained and prepared as much as they could be."
He shakes his head, slowly settles himself into one of the library's leather-lined chairs.
"The bard is many things, many admirable things, but he's unprepared, and he's no boy. He would not survive. By trying to save him, you would lose him all the faster."
Yennefer stands there, fists clenched, her heart racing in her chest.
"I can't just watch him die,"
she says, bitter and bitten off, and fuck
That's the first time she's said it. That's the first time she's even entertained the possibility that Jaskier will die. He will age and wither and die, and there is nothing she can do about it.
Sit, Vesemir sighs, not unkindly. And after a moment, Yennefer sits.
You have it better than most, sorceress,
he says, after a moment of quiet.
You and Geralt will have each other after he's gone. It's not perfect, I know, but it's better than nothing. You'll lose one lover, but the other will remain.
Yennefer bristles.
Do you think that that is comfort to me?
She hisses.
They are not interchangeable, Vesemir. I cannot simply swap one for another.
She pushes to her feet, hands trembling, arms shaking, skin practically on fire with rage and devastation and denial.
I will find a fucking way, she spits, with or without your Witcher secrets.
Vesemir's eyes are all of a sudden so very old.
I hope you do, Yennefer,
he says, quieter, softer.
I truly hope you do.
Yennefer can't take the fucking sympathy in his eyes. She goes.
Her house in Novigrad is exactly as she left it. Efficient staff and neat rooms and the library, an absolute mess. She stands in the door to the library for a long moment, staring at the uneven stacks of books that have clearly been neatened and dusted but not moved. And for a second, she remembers that first night she spent here, all those weeks ago, panicked and terrified, turning pages so fast she split her fingertips on the sharp edges, writing notes in a shaky, barely legible hand, and trying so very hard to stop the fear from devouring her whole.
But it wasn't weeks, she abruptly realizes. It was months.
Madame Yennefer, Roxana says at her elbow, as unobtrusive and reliable as she always is.
It is good to see you again.
There is a guest waiting for you in the salon, along with your correspondence. Should I bring in supper for you both?
A guest?
Yennefer asks.
Miss Cirilla,
Roxana says, and her lip twitches.
I did ask her to leave the swords with Bertrand, but she replied that she felt more comfortable keeping them with her.
Yennefer smiles faintly.
Like father, like daughter, she says.
Yes, supper would be excellent. She pauses, and her smile broadens.
And I'll see what I can do about the swords.
Roxana looks deeply grateful. Ciri is sitting sprawled out in one of the high-backed chairs in Yennefer's salon, her booted feet propped up on the edge of the table, her arms folded absently across her stomach. The offending swords are propped up against the unlit fireplace, the faintest smear of something green and crusty on one of the hilts. And, oh, Geralt would be furious if he saw that, Yennefer knows.
Not cleaning your swords properly, Cirilla?
Yennefer asks archly. Your Witcher trainers would be ashamed. Ciri twists in her chair, looks at Yennefer, then darts a look back at her swords and winces.
It was a long contract, she says, sounding a little sheepish.
I'd only just got back from collecting payment when I heard that you were back in town, and I missed you by a couple of hours in the autumn, your housekeeper said. Didn't want to risk missing you again.
Her forehead wrinkles in a frown.
I don't think she likes me, by the way.
She dislikes your swords, Yennefer answers, taking a seat opposite Ciri and nudging her feet off the table with a short burst of chaos. Don't take it personally.
I'll do my best, Ciri answers, sunny and full of laughter.
Something lightens in Yennefer's chest just a little.
What brings you to Novigrad?
Ciri shrugs.
There's always contracts in the area this time of year, she says. And I thought I'd stop by, see if you were around.
It's been a while since I've seen you, Yennefer.
I've been busy, Yennefer says, a little too quickly.
So I hear,
Ciri says, raising an eyebrow.
And, oh, her voice is rich with laughter, with mockery, with the same gentle teasing that Yennefer has heard so many years from the Eskir's lips.
Reports from all over the place. Yennefer of Engeberg has been blasting through archives and libraries and private collections of academic texts, terrorizing the historians and librarians of the continent.
Just a research project, Yennefer says, trying to calm the hammering of her heart.
Any success? Ciri asks, head cocked to one side.
Not so far, Yennefer answers, and doesn't think about Vesemir. Doesn't think about all those pages she's pored through with no results. Doesn't think about the gnawing fear that's settling deep in her gut.
But there's still time.
Well, we missed you, Ciri says blithely.
Kaer Morhen wasn't the same without you popping in and terrifying Lambert, although he still spent half the winter jumping at shadows.
She laughs, hugs one knee up to her chest like she used to when she was a girl, her boot leaving the faintest smudge of Novigrad dirt across the embroidered cushions.
Yes, Kaer made it into a competition. Who can make Lambert shit himself the most times in a day? And Geralt was actually the one who won, which surprises all.
I think it's mainly because me and Yaskir had spent so long ripping the shit out of him that he didn't expect Geralt to be the one to make the jokes.
She laughs, long and loud. Oh, Yennefer, you should have seen his fucking face.
Yennefer doesn't winter with the Witchers every year, and she doesn't even tend to spend the whole winter with them when she does. Most years, though, she'll stay for a week or two, spend most of the time training with Ciri, terrorizing Lambert, and doing her utmost to thoroughly exhaust both of her lovers. It's a snatched moment of quiet in the madness of her life, and she treasures it, she really does. She tucks the memories deep down in her heart and keeps them safe, keeps them for the nights when she's alone and hurting and the pain is almost too much to bear.
But she wasn't there this year. How many more years does she have?
So he asked her at Oxenford before I came here, by the way, Ciri says. He says he hasn't seen you since the autumn. 6 months or so? Something like that.
He looked a bit like that time I accidentally stepped on a baby griffin's tail while I was trying to get it back to its mother. All big, sad eyes and pouting. But he's also managed to lose his glasses again, so he might have just been struggling to see.
She snorts, shakes her head.
I know he's a smart man, Yennefer, but gods, sometimes he acts like an idiot.
Yennefer's lips twitch just a little.
He likes to be underestimated, she says, a little softer than she'd like. It comes from the days that I used to pass messages for the Redanian Secret Service, I think. It's easier to go unnoticed if everyone thinks you're a fool.
Makes sense, Ciri says, and then studies Yennefer for a moment, a smile creasing the skin around her eyes.
He said he misses you, she says, and then laughs to herself, adjusts.
Actually, he had a glass or two of wine, and he said that he missed, and I quote, the press of your silken thighs around his ears. And then he remembered he was talking to me, went bright red, swore a lot, and ordered me to forget everything I just heard.
Yennefer laughs, and all of a sudden a rush of longing sweeps through her chest, warm as a roaring fire in the depths of winter.
I'm glad to see that you disobeyed him, she says, eyebrow arched.
It wouldn't be proper for you to be taking orders from a bard, after all.
I'd never be welcome in your home again, Ciri says, her eyes laughing.
Roxana chooses that moment to come in with a supper tray. Two plates of baked salmon and two glasses of wine, and Ciri springs to her feet to help her set it down on the table between them.
The politeness doesn't stop Roxana eyeing Ciri's sword suspiciously, but she smooths down her skirts, nods to Yennefer, and leaves them to it without making any overt comments.
Yennefer just hides a smile in her hand, and reaches for her wine.
They talk long into the night, updates and reminiscences, laughter and moments of melancholy, and Ciri ends up sleeping in one of Yennefer's guest rooms. She can't stay longer. Something about a joint contract with Eskel, Yennefer doesn't pry. But that isn't a problem. No, it isn't a problem at all. Because the moment Ciri has ridden away in the light of a summer morning, her black mare's tail flicking high and proud, Yennefer takes her breath, reaches for her chaos, and opens a portal to Oxenfurt. It's toward the end of the summer term, and therefore, exam season. Students of the academy bustle through the town's quaint red-roofed streets with a faint air of panic, clutching quills and sheaves of notes, all of them dressed in the same odd uniform of black trousers, white shirt with an obscenely large ruffle down the front, black velvet ribbon tied in a bow around their neck, and formal academic gown. Yennefer studies the gowns as she makes her way through the streets, some of them long enough to sweep across the cobbles, others barely reaching the students' waists, some elaborately embroidered, others plain and simple. And, well, she recognizes a status marker when she sees one, but she has absolutely no idea what those status markers actually signify. She likes the velvet ribbons, though. The porters know her by now, and they let her through into the main building of the academy without question. Some of the students peer at her as she goes, eyes wide and admiring, but most of them seem preoccupied with last-minute revision, bent over books and scrolls and handfuls of tattered handwritten notes. Just for a moment, Yennefer thinks of the scrap of paper that she took from Yaskir's desk all those months ago. She still has it, hidden away in the depths of the small wyvern skin bag she carries over her shoulder. And she thinks about that poem, about those simple, unedited words. Evening fades to darkness cold. And, oh gods, no, she can't do this. She can't just smile at him and play nice, can't share his bed and love him like that. No, she doesn't fucking deserve to love him if she can't fucking save him. Yennefer! Yennefer has missed his voice. Yaskir is striding towards her across the quad, ignoring the signs that politely insist, keep off the grass, in favor of taking the shortest route possible to get to her. He's wearing the same ridiculous outfit that his students are wearing, his gown so long and so heavily embroidered that it's collecting tiny pebbles and dew-damp blades of grass along the bottom hem, and his lips are split in the broadest grin she's seen him wear in years. He reaches her before she can marshal her thoughts, before she can reconcile the pang of grief and the burst of joy that war in her heart, and sweeps her into his arms, laughing into her hair, pressing a firm kiss to her neck and squeezing her waist so tight it almost hurts. "My darling fucking Naiad," he says, overflowing with happiness. "I have missed you!" His hair is still gray where it catches against Yennefer's cheek. "Yaskir," she says, wraps her arms around his shoulders, runs her fingers through his hair, and can't quite manage to keep the grief out of her eyes.
"Well, I thought I was lucky when Geralt showed up,"
Yaskir says, half muffled by her hair.
"Gods, I love it when you're both here at once."
He kisses her neck again, hugs her tighter. Over his shoulder, Yennefer sees Geralt walking towards them, his shoulders light, his silver-white hair catching in the summer sun. He's smiling, not as manic as Yaskir, not as exuberant, but they're all the same. But then he meets her eye and his expression stills, slides into concern. He quickens his step, worry written in his eyes, and he's going to say something. He's going to break this moment. Yennefer slides her hand into Yaskir's hair, shakes her head at Geralt as much as she can, begging without words, "Not now, Geralt, please not now." Geralt's gaze flickers between them, focuses on her hand, gripping Yaskir's gray-streaked hair so very tight. And all of a sudden, Yennefer sees that he understands. Yaskir pulls back, beams at her, then kisses her fiercely, brightly, so full of all that fucking love that just spills out of his every pore. Your timing is appalling, he says cheerily, seemingly unaware of the grief that twists her gut. I'm actually busy all day assessing final recitals, so I'm afraid our Witcher is going to have to keep you company. Yennefer takes a breath, pieces her heart back together as best she can. Is that why you're dressed in this absurd outfit? She asks, plucking at the ruffles cascading down his chest. It is, Yaskir says, a little wry. Oxenfurt's academic dress does leave a little to be desired in the fashion department, I have to admit. He runs a fingertip across the velvet ribbon tied around his throat, studies her with a spark of heat in his eyes. I look forward to you stripping me out of it later. Yaskir, Geralt rumbles, his hand coming to rest at Yennefer's waist, light and gentle, reassuring.
You're going to be late.
And whose fault is that, exactly? Yaskir says primly. You were the one who dragged me back into bed, you beast.
Go,
Geralt says, his smile shockingly fond, and Yennefer's heart contracts in her chest.
Yaskir only grumbles quietly to himself.
I'll meet you both tonight, he says, kissing Geralt, kissing Yennefer. Then groans softly to himself and kisses them both again. Fuck, he says, eyes sparkling. It's been far too long since I've had you both in my bed. He laughs. All my students are getting first no matter how shit they are. I'm in far too good a mood to be a harsh marker today. He kisses Yennefer once more, his hands on her cheeks, heated and passionate, a promise and a pledge. Gods, I love you, he whispers between her lips. Kisses her again, and then he's gone, slipping out of the quad, his gown flaring out behind him like the wings of some dark-feathered bird. Yennefer takes a breath, closes her eyes. Geralt takes her hand. Come on, he says softly. Let's get you a drink. It's first thing in the morning, Yennefer says, her heart still racing in her chest. Geralt guides her back towards Yaskir's staircase, his hand resting warm and steady at the small of her back, and doesn't answer. Yennefer sits heavily in one of the overstuffed armchairs in Yaskir's sitting room, and watches as Geralt digs a demijohn of vodka and two crystal glasses out of a cabinet. He pours them each a generous measure, hands one glass to Yennefer, then sets the demijohn down on the low table between them and takes a seat in the matching armchair. He studies her for a moment, watches as she gulps down half her fucking glass, then takes a slow mouthful of his own, savors it for a moment. Yennefer doesn't speak. She doesn't know where to start.
It was maybe 10 years after I met him,
Geralt says, his voice rough, pinched.
I had been sharing my bed for 6 years or so by then, off and on. We never talked about it, even though sometimes I could tell he wanted to.
He pauses, stares at his glass, fragile and gleaming in his scarred hands.
And then I went on a hunt for a Bruxa,
he says, shaking his head.
I tried to get the fucking idiot to stay behind, but he gave me some shit about vampires being good material for romantic ballads, and insisted on coming with me.
He sips, slow and somehow frantic at the same time. Yennefer echoes the motion.
I lost track of her in the darkness,
Geralt says.
And when I turned around, she had her teeth buried in his throat.
Yennefer sucks in a sharp breath. I've seen the scar, she says abruptly, on his neck below his ear. Geralt nods, something indefinable flickering across his expression.
He's human, he says. I'd always known that. But standing there watching that Bruxa fade from him, it was the first time I realized that he was mortal.
He breathes, finishes his drink, reaches for the demijohn. Yennefer's ahead of him, and she wordlessly holds her glass out for a refill.
"It's why I pushed him away," Geralt says, not meeting her gaze. "After the dragon hunt, yes, but before then, too. Every time I could see that he wanted to talk instead of just fuck, I'd just shut him down. Change the subject. Walk away. Left him in the middle of the Temerian Moors once, with nothing but his loot. Didn't see him for 4 months.
You couldn't cope with the prospect of losing him," Yennefer says, her voice startlingly small. Geralt hums and sits back in his chair.
"That's part of why I was so drawn to you," he says, quieter. "You're like me. You won't fade."
His lips curl in a bitter smile.
"You're harder to kill."
Yennefer's breath is shaky.
"How do you do it?" she asks, fingers tight around the crystal glass. "How do you go on, knowing that every moment you spend with him is a moment closer to losing him?"
Geralt doesn't answer her question.
"What happened?"
he asks instead, studying her.
"The morning you left, in the autumn. What happened?"
Yennefer tosses back her vodka far too quickly, coughs a little as it burns her throat. "A poem," she says, feeling the warmth of the alcohol in her belly. "I found it on his desk, some insignificant scrap of verse, not even finished, about his own fucking mortality." Her hands tremble just a little.
"I looked at him," she says, anger bubbling up in her voice. "Fast asleep in your arms, and all I could see was age. The gray hair, the wrinkles, the fucking glasses that he doesn't seem to be able to keep track of."
Geralt's lips twist in a gentle, bitter smile.
"I told him to keep them on a chain around his neck,"
he says wryly.
"But he told me that would make him look like someone called Professor Jankowski in the astrology faculty, and that he'd lose any semblance of professional dignity if his students could compare him to an astrologer."
Yennefer snorts.
"I think he lost his dignity a long time ago," she says. "Professional or otherwise."
"Which is what I told him,"
Geralt says.
"Then he got annoyed and pushed me out of bed."
Yennefer laughs at that image, short and sharp. But once she's started, she can't seem to stop. She crawls in on herself, glass of vodka held between shaking fingers, and she laughs, angry and bitter and full of pain, full of all the frustration of 100 archives searched, 100 librarians menaced, 100 towns scoured for their secrets, and nothing to show for it. She laughs because there's nothing else she can do. She laughs because there's nothing else anyone can do. Because she's spent months trawling through the records of the continent, months trying to find some way to fix this. But she's just the latest in a long line of humans who've tried to find a way to live forever. People have devoted their lives to this, hundreds of them, thousands, and no one has managed to work it out. Yennefer laughs, and somewhere along the way her laughter turns to tears, spilling down her cheeks, spattering across the polished wooden floor of Yaskir's rooms. Sobs wrench themselves out of her like earthquakes, shuddering through her heart, her lungs, and this is why she shouldn't have done this. This is why she should have kept him at arm's length. This is why she should have turned her back on him that night in Tassan, should have left, should have pushed him away, because nothing is worth being this vulnerable. Geralt's kneeling at her side, and he takes the glass from her hand, sets it to one side, and pulls her into his arms.
"Yen,"
he says, his voice a throaty rumble, and holds her close.
Yennefer rends her fingernails into the fabric of his shirt, snarls into his shoulder, fights against the steel of his arms for a moment before she can't do it anymore. And she collapses against him, knees on the hard floors, cheeks wet with tears, breath hitching and pausing, and oh, fuck, she doesn't know what to do. I can't do this, she grinds out through gritted teeth. I can't. Geralt doesn't say anything, just wraps his arms tighter around her. Yennefer doesn't know how long it takes for her breathing to slow, for her heart to stop racing, for her tears to stop falling. She stays in Geralt's firm embrace a moment longer, then pushes away, gets to her feet, goes to the wash basin in Yaskir's bedroom and cleans her face, washes her hands, brushes the dust and dirt off the skirts of her dress, and takes a long, slow breath. She's exhausted, utterly drained. But as Geralt comes to stand in the doorframe, silent and watchful, she realizes that she feels a little lighter. Come with me, Geralt says, and takes her hand. I want to show you something. Yennefer's hands aren't trembling anymore. Geralt leads her out into the summer sun, into the green of the lawns and the gold of the stone. It's quiet. The students presumably gone to their exams, to their classes, to the studying. And Yennefer feels a strange kind of calm settling over her, bone deep, wrung out. Geralt takes her on a winding path through the academy's cloisters and quadrangles, past statues of long-dead kings and extravagantly topiaried hedges, under elegant arches and dappled stained glass. He doesn't speak to her, doesn't distract her with meaningless chatter, and Yennefer finds that she's glad. She listens to the birdsong, to the rhythm of their footsteps, to the whisper of the summer breeze, to the rustle of pages and the soft murmur of voices. And to the music. Yennefer frowns, cocks her head to the side, and listens. There's music coming from somewhere up ahead, a female voice singing something high and startlingly fast to the accompaniment of a harp. Yennefer isn't a professional, but she's heard Yaskir jabber about music more than enough to know that whoever the singer is, she is extremely talented. Geralt guides Yennefer to a bench, wood worn smooth through the seasons and the years, and they sit. She frowns as the singer comes to a triumphant finish, trilling on a staggeringly high note for a period of time that Yennefer thinks must be magically enhanced somehow. No one's lung capacity can be that impressive. I thought you wanted to show me something? She asks, into the brief silence that follows. Geralt settles back against the bench. Just listen, he says, and leaves it at that. Yennefer's too tired to do anything else. She sits back, Geralt a reassuringly solid presence at her side, and closes her eyes. The sun is warm, the breeze is cooling, and she lets herself relax as much as she can, the numbness in her heart starting to fade just a little. The music fills the air around her, that same lilting female voice sliding through the notes with an elegance and a grace that Yennefer can't help but envy, just a little. And they're too far away from wherever she's singing to hear the words, but the melodies are clear enough. High and sparkling and astonishingly fast, and then slow and rich and full of emotional depth. And then intricate and dancing, a clear showpiece, bouncing up and down the octave like it's easy, like it's no more complex than breathing. Yennefer doesn't recognize them, but she can appreciate the skill involved. There's a pause between songs, and Yennefer looks up at the deep, rich blue of the sky. The female singer's voice weaves through the summer stillness once more, this time singing something slow and sultry, lyrical and languorous. She's unaccompanied, no harp this time, no flute or lute or viol either, And Yennefer frowns because she thinks she recognizes this melody. She can't make out the words, which doesn't help, and she leans forward, head cocked to one side, listening. It comes to her in the space between one heartbeat and the next. "Shit," she whispers, recognition seizing in her heart. "Ian?" "This is one of Yaskir's songs," Yennefer says, her mouth dry, her fingers clenching uselessly in her skirts. "It's..." She trails off, can't continue, because this is the song that he sang in Tassan. This is the song that he sang at that heat-drenched banquet where the sweat dripped off the end of the Duke's nose and the guests drank until they poured their drinks all over themselves. This is the song that he sang for her. The song that he wrote because he couldn't help himself, because he was completely in love with her and he thought that she would never feel the same. It's the song that he still sometimes hums to her on lazy mornings in bed, the song that echoes in her heart whenever she sees him smile. The girl sings Yaskir's love song in her bright young voice, adding vocal flourishes and elegant trills, singing a bright, beautiful song of someone else's heartbreak. "It's the final recitals," Geralt says, his arms stretched along the bench behind her. "The ones he's assessing." He stretches his legs out across the grass in front of them. "I sat out here yesterday when I was waiting for him to finish, and pretty much every student sings something of his. Heard 4 different versions of Toss a Fucking Coin, none of them as good as the original." A smile twitches Yennefer's lips. They're trying to flatter their tutor into giving them higher marks. "Something like that," Geralt answers, amusement thick in his voice. Yennefer twists to look at him as the singer's voice floats silky and warm through the air. "Is this what you wanted to show me?" she asks. "Because if so, I'm afraid I don't understand." Geralt watches her for a moment, his yellow eyes blazingly gold in the summer sun. "I don't know this song," he says. "What's it about?" Yennefer's mouth is dry. "It's about me," she says softly. "It's a love song." Geralt smiles, small and achingly warm. "The songs survive," he says. And, oh, Yennefer can hear the pain in his voice, the sadness, the grief. "I've heard them sung in taverns and inns across the continent. Courts, too. His voice, his music on other singers' lips. His songs will outlast him." Yennefer can't stop the shudder that twists through her. "Is that supposed to help?" she asks, but can't quite find the bile she wants to pour into her voice. Geralt nods towards the sound of the girl's voice. "His love for you is in that song," he says, "and the song will survive." Yennefer's heart twists. "Is that all we get?" she asks, her voice high and thin, almost reedy. "His songs? He will die and we will lose him, and we are supposed to be satisfied with his songs?" "No," Geralt says, suddenly sharp. "No, we are not supposed to be satisfied with it, Yen. There's nothing satisfying about it. But you asked me how I do it. How I cope." His jaw is tight, his eyes are blazing, and all around them the sweet sound of the girl's voice hangs in the air. "This is how," he says, softer. "I cannot spend the rest of the time I have with him mourning, and neither can you. If nothing else, it isn't fair on him." A muscle jumps in his jaw. "We have the rest of our lives to grieve him," he says,
bitter and broken. He doesn't get that luxury. Yennefer closes her eyes, listens to the soft sound of the girl's voice mingling with the summer breeze, the song of the birds, the murmur of distant footsteps. And she isn't Yaskir, whoever she is. She can never be Yaskir. But she can hear the echo of his voice in hers. It hurts, like a needle in her heart. Do we just stay with him? She asks, barely more than a whisper. Do we just watch him age? Watch him lose his hair and his eyesight and his memory? Watch him wither into a shadow of himself? And Yennefer has never had the gift of foresight, never been able to see glimpses of things that are yet to be, but in this moment, she can see it, sharper in her mind than any thought, any memory. The soft fleece of the blankets, the delicate embroidery across the pillows, the tracery of thin blue veins across the backs of lute-calloused hands. Clouded blue eyes, skin creased like paper, the smell of salt in the air. Geralt, looking no different to how he does now, sitting with Yaskir's aged hands in his, speaking to him so softly, so gently, brushing snow-white hair back from his eyes. And Yaskir sighs, lips curling in a smile, and turns his gaze to Yennefer, brighter than the sun and so full of love, even now. Yen? Yennefer opens her eyes to summer in Oxenfurt. Do we watch him die, Geralt? She asks, too tired to be combative. Is that what we do? If we have to, Geralt says, and his lips twist in bitter irony. But we live dangerous lives, Yen. We might not live long enough ourselves. Yennefer ignores his flippancy. And what then? She asks, the taste of salt still heavy on her lips. When he's gone. We sing his songs for him, Geralt answers. We keep his memory alive any way we can. The only way we can. Yennefer smiles bitterly. Neither of us is much of a singer, Geralt. Geralt inclines his head toward the sound of the girl's voice, now singing something different, a series of fast-paced, rippling notes that sounds like the bubbling of a river in spring. But she is, he says. And the others who study here. He asks her students, his friends. His words, his songs, they'll sing them after he's gone. Yennefer reaches out, grips Geralt's hand, digs her nails in so hard it must hurt. She doesn't know what to say. He's still here again, Geralt says softly. He's in there, at least, preening and overmarking his students. And he'll be with us tonight, prancing around in that stupid Oxenfurt outfit until we tear it off him. Yennefer tries to smile. I might borrow the ribbon, she says, her voice hoarse, and touches the obsidian star hanging around her throat. This one's getting a little worn. Geralt's lips twitch in a quiet smile, and he leans forward, kisses her softly. I love you, Yen, he says. So does Yaskir. It would be easier if you didn't, Yennefer says, resting her forehead against his. It would be easier if I didn't give a fuck about either of you. If Yaskir had never seen me in Vizima, if I'd never come back to you in Odgeg, it wouldn't hurt so much. Geralt pauses, his breath warm against her lips. Do you regret it? Yennefer kisses him. I wish I did, she says, and feels something settle in her heart.
That would be easier, too. Because then I would have a justification for walking away. She reaches up, runs her fingers through Geralt's hair. But for some reason, I don't. Geralt hums.
High praise.
All of a sudden, Yennefer is so very tired. Her muscles are sore, her fingers are aching, and there's a persistent, nagging exhaustion settled deep in her chest that she can't quite manage to shake off. I think, she says, a little uneven, that we should get something to eat. And then I'd really quite like to go back and finish off that vodka, unless you have other plans for the day.
I'm sure that can be arranged,
Geralt says, and kisses her once more before he gets to his feet.
Come on. Yesker took me to a little place down the waterfront yesterday. They do good kippers.
Kippers? Yennefer echoes thoughtfully, then nods, takes Geralt's offered hand, and stands.
Do they do them with poached eggs?
They do,
Geralt confirms, and leads her away through the cloisters of the academy. They go to a small, homespun cafe with a striped awning set right on the waterfront, and Yennefer eats poached eggs and kippers, the yolk perfectly cooked, the kippers fresh and peppery on her tongue. The sun is hot and heavy in the sky by the time they're done, and they walk slowly through the streets of Oxenfurt Town, Yennefer's hand tucked into the crook of Geralt's elbow, promenading in the sunlight like they're courting, like they're flirting, like they're normal folk, not a witcher and a sorceress tied together by death and destiny. They grab a late lunch in the town, pierogi and beers at a rickety market stall, and then they go back to Yaskia's rooms for a little while, drink a few more glasses of what is actually fairly nice vodka, then take the demijohn down to the quad below, lounge across the grass they're not supposed to walk on, until they're chased away by one of the groundskeepers, who clearly doesn't give a shit who they are or how much power they have between them. They go back to the bench outside the music faculty, in the end, to listen to the last few students of the day and critique their performances. And when the doors open and the examiners come filing out, they're waiting. Yesker sees them straight away. He bids farewell to his colleagues, a grin splitting his lips. And Yennefer's heart hurts when she sees him, yes. But the pain isn't skewering anymore, isn't violent, isn't the kind of agony that tears her apart from the inside out. He's still here. He's still here, right in front of her, eyes as blue as the sky, ruffled shirt and heavy gown and velvet ribbon. And she goes to him, pulls him to her in front of passing academics and loitering students, kisses him like it's their first kiss, kisses him and feels her heart soar when he kisses her back.
Get me out of these clothes, Yennefer.
Yasker murmurs against her lips, his breath sweet and heady.
It's been far too long since I've been inside you.
Back in Yaskir's rooms, Yennefer and Geralt pin their fragile, mortal bard between them and strip him naked, the frills and fripperies of his academic dress falling to the floor in a pile of ruffles and embroidery. Yasker goes to rip the ribbon from his throat, pupils shot wide, cheeks flushed and lips red, but Yennefer stops him, knots it a little tighter, then uses it to lead him to bed. He makes a little groaning noise in the back of his throat as she pushes him down to the bedspread, then sighs her name like it's the finest song he has ever sung. Yennefer strips off her dress and settles into his lap, velvet ribbon wrapped around her fingers, and she kisses him like this is the only thing that matters, like he's the only thing that matters. And then Geralt's there at her back, his lips hot on her neck, his hands sliding up to cup her breasts, and, well, it only gets better from there on in. When Yennefer has them both inside her, Yasgir murmuring sweet nothings into her throat, Geralt letting out wordless, breathy grunts with every twitch of his hips, she lets her head fall back against Geralt's shoulder and loses herself in the sensation. The heat, stretch, the unstoppable pleasure that sparks through every nerve in her body, the damp rush of Geralt's breath, the slick press of Yasgir's lips.
It's so much. Almost too much. It's perfect. This is perfect.
Yennefer turns to catch Geralt's lips in a messy kiss, then leans forward, takes Jaskier's face between her hands, kisses him in turn.
Yennefer, he groans between her lips, and Geralt almost growls into her shoulder in response.
Jaskier comes first, collapsing back on the bed with hitching, gasping moans, and then he reaches down between Yennefer's legs, brings her to orgasm with rough, exacting strokes of his fingertips. She cries out, spasms against Jaskier's hands, and the movement must do something to Geralt, because he buries a gasp in her shoulder, thrusts a few more harsh, snapping times, and comes with a rumbling groan.
Fuck,
Jaskier husks, laid out on the bed beneath her, flushed and sweaty and grinning, that black velvet ribbon still tied tight around his throat.
I've missed this.
Yennefer feels Geralt's arms around her waist, warm and strong. And that needle is still in her heart, sharp and piercing. But it's like a remembered pain now. It isn't so insistent.
I missed you, she says, one hand twining with Geralt's over her stomach, the other scratching through the hair on Jaskier's chest.
I'm sorry I was gone so long.
Jaskier reaches up, brushes his thumb across her cheek. His smile is soft.
You don't need to apologize, he says. I'm here whenever you want me.
I always want you, Yennefer says, and feels Geralt bury his nose in her hair, huff a laugh against the nape of her neck. She reaches down, toys with the end of the ribbon around Jaskier's neck.
That's sort of the problem.
Jaskier laughs.
Well, then, he practically purrs. Why don't you come down here and kiss me? We've got plenty of time, after all. I've got nowhere I need to be.
Yennefer doesn't exactly get much sleep that night. In the morning, she's woken by Geralt shifting on Jaskier's other side,
murmuring something about needing a piss and rooting around for his trousers.
Yennefer ignores him, just rolls over, and buries her face in Jaskier's shoulder, her fingers scratching lightly across his bare stomach, a little softer than it used to be.
Bring us breakfast,
Jaskier demands, throws his arm around her shoulders, hugging her closer.
I demand it. Bacon and eggs and toast and orange juice. And black pudding. Oh, and mushrooms.
You're spoiled, Geralt says fondly. I just have high standards, Jaskier answers, laughing. Geralt hums, amused, and Yennefer listens to the sound of his retreating footsteps, eyes still closed. Jaskier's fingers run slowly through her hair, and he presses a kiss to her forehead.
Now that we're alone, my naiad,
he says, soft and startlingly tender.
Do you want to talk about whatever's bothering you?
He kisses her again, careful and light.
You don't have to, he murmurs against her skin. I know how much you love talking about your emotions. It's just your favorite thing.
Yennefer snorts at the sarcasm, tilts upwards, catches his lips in a kiss.
And I'm assuming, Jaskier continues, from the fact that my vodka is half empty when it definitely wasn't yesterday morning, that you actually managed to get some kind of productive conversation out of Geralt's. So, you know, you might not even need me.
He kisses her once more, his hand carding through her hair.
But I love you, he says softly, curling closer. And I missed you. And I've made you come at least 4 times. So I think it's time for me to see to your emotional needs, too.
Yennefer laughs, just a little, and traces patterns across the skin of his chest. A little more weathered, a little less youthful, but still solid and steady under her hands.
I thought you hadn't noticed, she says, not quite meeting his gaze.
What, didn't notice that the moment you saw me, you looked like you wanted to vomit?
Yasker asks, a little teasing, a little concerned.
No, that wasn't obvious at all.
Yennefer glares at him.
You didn't say anything.
I was dressed up like a fool and running late for my students' final recitals. Yasker answers gently.
I know I like to cultivate a reputation for being unreliable and a bit of a disaster, but they do rely on me. And this is pretty much the one time in the academic year that I can't just reschedule whenever the mood suits me.
He tucks a strand of hair behind her ear,
and Yennefer abruptly realizes that there's guilt in his expression, cloying and thick.
I knew Geralt would look after you, Yasker says, pressing a soft kiss to her forehead.
I had to trust that that would be enough. For a second, Yennefer considers not telling him.
She knows that she could. Knows that she could just say that it's done, it's sorted. Geralt held her hand through it and it's all fine. And Yasker would accept that.
That would be the easier path. The less painful path.
It would be simpler. Yennefer extricates herself from his embrace, slips out of bed, and pads to where she left her wyvern skin bag, hung from Yasker's desk chair by its shoulder strap. She can feel Yasker watching, intrigued, as she retrieves the tiny folded scrap of paper, feels it warm and worn against the skin of her palm. And then she goes back to bed, tangles herself up in him, and presses the stolen poem into his hand. She can't quite look at him as he unfolds it, so she gazes out the window instead, watches the whispering leaves of the cherry tree that woke her all those months ago, watches the blue of the sky and the bright warmth of the sun. Yasker lets out a soft breath. Oh, he says, and almost instinctively pulls her closer. The paper is torn and tattered, splattered with blue ink she knocked over on Bernard, one corner ripped clean away, another stained with a splash of red wine from a particularly bad night in some little monastery on the ass end of Lyria. The words, though, are untouched, and Yennefer watches Yasker run his fingertips over his own handwriting, squinting a little to read it.
I thought I lost this, he says, a little absent. Figured I must have accidentally thrown it out. I do that sometimes, more so recently.
I found it on your desk, Yennefer says, her hand pressed to his heart, feeling the steady thudding of his pulse, of his life. In the autumn, when I left. I didn't intend to take it. Yasker's arm tightens around her.
No need to apologize, he says, even though she didn't.
It was just a thought, a passing moment. It's not even very good. He lets the poem fall to the floor and turns to face her. His eyes are so very blue and so very bright. I'm sorry, Yennefer, he whispers, his arms shaking just a little, his breath guttering against her lips. So fucking sorry. And Yennefer knows that he's not sorry for the quality of the poetry or for letting her find it like that. No, he's sorry for everything. For her grief, for her loss, for being the one to hurt her, for being the one to one day break her heart. Yennefer lets out a soft, stuttering breath and kisses him as hard as she can. The sex is rushed and rough, not tender, not teasing, not loving and ecstatic and full of laughter like it usually is. Yasker is wordless for once, preoccupied with plundering her mouth and fucking into her as hard and fast as he can. And Yennefer doesn't command or instruct or direct. No, she just winds her hands into his hair and closes her eyes as he does everything in his power to show her that he's still here. He's still alive. He's still hers. She comes with a hoarse cry, and he follows her over the edge seconds later, forehead buried in her throat, breath panting hot against her chest. Neither of them speaks afterwards,
because there are no words to be said. Geralt comes back a little later, carrying a tray that's piled high with a frankly obscene amount of breakfast food. He takes one look at them, wrapped up together, buried in each other in tear-streaked silence, and puts the tray to one side, strips off, gets back into bed. He doesn't say a word, doesn't try to separate them, just adds himself to the tangle of their bodies, chest pressed to Yaskir's back, fingers tangling in Yennefer's hair. Yaskir lets out a soft breath, held between them as he always is. "I love you," he says, his voice firm and sure and only breaking right at the end. "Both of you. I will always love you. Even when I'm dead and gone, when I'm nothing more than rotting bones in the ground and you two are still young and gorgeous, I swear to you right now that my ghost will follow you both around, singing paeans and hymns about how much I fucking love you." Geralt snorts softly, and Yennefer watches him kiss Yaskir's shoulder.
"Don't turn into a ghost," he murmurs. "Don't want to have to take a contract to get rid of you."
Yaskir scoffs.
"Like you'd be able to get rid of me," he says. "I know all your tricks, Witcher. I'd slip right out of your grasp."
"While singing hymns about how much you love him?" Yennefer asks, an ache in her heart and an arch to her eyebrow. Seems a little counterproductive.
"What, so you want Geralt to banish ghost me?" Yaskir asks, mock offended. "Yennefer, how could you?"
"I'm fairly sure that you would only be more irritating as a ghost," Yennefer says. "And it's dry, and it's dark, and, for some reason, it lifts a weight from her heart. Now I can just lock my door if I can't be bothered to listen to your caterwauling. If you were a ghost, you could just drift in through the wall."
"My caterwauling?" Yaskir objects in a shrill voice.
"There are ways you can protect against spirits and wraiths,"
Geralt offers, his arms sliding around Yaskir's stomach, his lips curling in a smirk.
"Symbols, rituals. We could keep them out."
"Oh, so now I'm dead and rejected by my immortal lovers," Yaskir says.
"Perfect. Ghost me is going to stand right underneath your bedroom window and serenade you all night long. All those songs I've written about your mighty rod of love, Geralt, and about Yennefer's quivering nub of delight, the ones I'm not allowed to sing in public, you're getting nightly spectral concerts of all of them. I'll make sure my lute is perfectly discordant, too, as befits a restless spirit. Although I'm not sure it would make much of a difference to you two musical Philistines."
"Ghosts don't have lutes, Yaskir,"
Geralt answers, as brusque and amused as ever.
"Oh, fuck you, Witcher. My ghost will have all the lutes he fucking wants."
Yennefer laughs, a real laugh this time, so bright it's almost blinding. She can still feel that needle in her heart, that jolting, aching pain that she knows she'll live with for the rest of her long life. But Yaskir is smiling at her, the crow's feet around his eyes creasing with laughter, the gray in his hair shining in the soft morning light. He's still here, treating jibes with Geralt as easy as breathing. And even if this won't last forever, even if one day she'll sit at his bedside in a cottage by the sea and watch him fade away, that future doesn't erase this moment.
"I'll make one for you," Yennefer says, not bothering to hide her smile.
"A ghostly lute. You can take it with you wherever you wander, and caterwaul in the night to your heart's content."
"See, Geralt," Yaskir says, "at least Yennefer is trying to offer a creative solution."
"Of course, I'd have to destroy your actual lute to do it," Yennefer says blithely, her fingertips tracing patterns in the curls of his hair. "Smash it up, grind the wood into dust, snap the strings, melt down the gilt and burn the tuning pegs."
She shrugs. "It's the only way."
Yaskir's outraged protests and Yennefer's laughing replies are lost in the hum of another summer morning, little more than a whisper beneath the patter of students' feet and the mutter of their conversations, a counterpoint to the lilting, vibrant birdsong overhead. The sky is rich and blue. The sun beats down on the green lawns and the red roofs. And in one of the Academy's sprawling quads, a young woman lies with her head in her lover's lap, relaxed and happy after the last of her exams. She's humming absently under her breath, only half aware that she's doing it, singing one of the songs that she performed for her examiners yesterday afternoon. A song of obsidian-black midnight skies, of bruised purple storm clouds, of wine in Vizima and whiskey in Aretusa, of lavender mead in Kedwin and Estest in Tucson, of more wine in Camorin, of vodka in Oxenfurt on a bright summer's day. The sultry, languid melody spirals up into the deep blue of the sky, echoing in the open spaces of the world. It's a love song, and it's not even fucking subtle. The end!
Author's notes. So, when we were brainstorming this fic, back in May, June time, I think it was, Rena Jenkins asked me if I'd be up for recording my author's notes. I said, yeah, sure, sounds good, brilliant idea. And now here I am, rambling away into my phone and feeling like a bit of an idiot. So, here goes. I wasn't in fandom kind of properly for a long time before The Witcher came along. The last time was, I think, 2012, 2013, when the first Hobbit film came out, and I was promptly obsessed with that for a couple of months. But the Hobbit fandom was where I first met, in inverted commas, Rena Jenkins. She reached out to me, asking if she could record my various kink meme fics that I wrote for that fandom, which was when I discovered that podfic existed at all. And I actually really enjoyed listening to my words and my stories being read by someone else. Sounds slightly narcissistic, but oh well. And I mean, I don't even like audiobooks that much. I don't listen to audiobooks at all. So it was a surprise, but it was a nice surprise. After that, I fell out of fandom for ages. And then in January, I watched The Witcher for Henry Cavill, came away with a deep, deep, undying love for Jaskier and Joey Beatty, as did the rest of the fandom by the looks of it, and fell headfirst into fanworks and fanfiction all over again. And then who should show up in my AO3 comments but Rena Jenkins? A bit of a blast from the past. I think my first reply to her first comment was something like, "I remember you." She ended up recording a bunch of my fics, and I enjoyed them so much that when I was writing, I started hearing my words and especially my dialogue. She has a fantastic, fantastic Jaskier. I started hearing the words that I was writing in her voice. I think it was maybe Skin Deep that I first started noticing I was doing it. So that was back in April sometime. So, you know, sorry for being a creepy brain stalker, Rena, but it's all worked out well in the end. And that kind of meant that when she asked, slightly out of the blue, if I'd like to collaborate on something called Pod Together, which I'd never heard of before, I was really up for it. And I've never kind of collaborated on anything fan worky before, really, aside from a bit of beta reading back in 2009, maybe. But the whole process has just been really, really brilliant, really fantastic. So the fic itself, a good few verses, or a few good verses, as my brain insists on calling it every time I think about it. I love a good OT3, and I was really attracted to the idea of the Yennefer Geralt Jaskier OT3 in particular. But my problem's always been that in canon in particular, you never get the other side of that triangle. You get Geralt and Jaskier, and you get Geralt and Yennefer, but all you get of Jaskier and Yennefer is a bit of sniping. You know, you get that crow's feet line, and you get the whole kind of current girlfriend and ex-girlfriend vibe that they have going on. And in a lot of fan works that I kind of read for that OT3, it always seemed to be that you had these two kind of individual relationships established, and then the sort of the Yennefer and Jaskier side of it just happened. I, even before kind of Pod Together, I had in the back of my mind that I wanted to explore that kind of third relationship, that third side of the triangle. And then Rena said that she was interested in recording something that would be Yennefer-centric, and this idea for this 5+1 kind of structure with all the drinking, so much drinking, just popped into my head. The fic ended up being a lot longer than I meant it to be. I think my original estimate was something like 10,000 to 15,000 words. But my lovely partner very much encouraged me to go big. And then I did, so blame her for that. A lot of things about this fic and a lot of bits and pieces in this fic would not have existed without Rena Jenkins's contribution and input at all. I think I would have written a story, but it wouldn't have looked like this in many ways. It's little things like there's a paragraph in part two where Yaskia talks about how Tossacoin has brought a load of tourism to Posada, and like the mayor of Posada has given him the keys to the town because of this, which is entirely from Rena. And the drunken conversation that Yennefer and Yaskia have about Ciri in part three comes straight out of the kind of the emails that we had. I really don't think I would have written that without that input, which would be a shame because I really like it. I think it's kind of the emotional heart of the story in a way. So it was really nice during the editing process to go back through and sort of see the things that came from me, the things that came from her, and how everything's ended up meshing together into this monster of a story that I'm really, really proud of, actually. Even if about 20% of it just ended up being porn, which is something this fandom has very much introduced me to, writing vast amounts of just sex. Like, I've never done that before. But you know what? It's quite fun. And on that note, that auspicious note, that's probably enough of me rambling, so I'm going to stop. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this story as much as I've enjoyed writing it and sort of creating it. And thank you to my lovely pop-fiction partner, Rena Jenkins. This project has been an absolute delight and has really kept me going throughout this mad summer of quarantine insanity. So, genuinely, thank you.
Reader's Notes. Hey, it's Rena Jenkins. In case you forgot what my voice sounded like after the last 9.5 hours. So these are my reader's notes for A Good Few Verses, and this is the part of the podvic where I wax effusive about Soul Space and this story and Pod Together 2020, which is a milestone. This is the 10th year that this collaboration project has happened, and I have had an incredible experience every year, which is like, I don't know, it kind of sounds like something cheesy to say, but it really, I've had such wonderful collaborative projects that have come out of this, and this story in particular is just like the perfect thing to cap off a decade of projects like this. So, as Sospace mentioned a little earlier, I had recorded a bunch of her stuff back in Hobbit fandom in like 2012 to 2014, probably. Jeez, Hobbit fandom was a while ago. And then just sort of made my way through her catalog of that stuff and made myself at home with the feely keely and the feelings. And then, you know, people move on to different fandoms and they fall out of touch with each other. And then suddenly it was February and my sister's boyfriend was like, "Watch The Witcher. I think it's great. It's like the Game of Thrones, but without the terrible things. And I think you'd really enjoy it." And then I did, because it was enjoyable. And of course, the first thing I did after watching that was go looking for fic. And who did I see but Sospace right there? Name recognition. Wait, hang on. I think there's blanket permission, but I should double check. So I sent a left comment, and it was a very moment of like, I hope you recognize me. I hope this isn't weird coming out of nowhere. How can I conveniently and non-creepily remind you of the fact that we did in fact know each other once? And I was like all kind of stoked for it to be weird or potentially awkward. And then it wasn't. It was in fact a delightful reconnection happening right there. And then I kind of, again, made myself at home in Suspace's Witcher fic and, like, you know, rolled around in like a happy puppy, and it was delightful. And then I left another comment on fic that was basically like, so, since you're still here and you have not run screaming yet, how do you feel about pod together? And kind of dubconned an agreement. I think I may have come on a little strong. But I think it's such an amazing, incredibly interactive and collaborative experience for this. And I love the stuff that comes out of it. And I'm very excited and enthusiastic about this challenge. Anyway, and Suspice said yes. And that was in May. And Pod Together signups didn't actually open until, like, the second week of June. So we definitely got a head start on this project. And I think it shows, because this story is incredible. And it was such a wonderful, affirming experience, like, as far as, like, bouncing ideas off of each other. Suspace was so welcoming to, like, let me just... Oh, shut up. It's been sirens all goddamn night. Oh, yeah, it's, like, 2 in the morning, and my second deadline extension has already come and gone, and... Well, I listened to Suspice's all those notes, and they were too sincere for words, and it took me a couple moments to take a breath and step down and figure out how to answer that properly, because you say too many nice things for me, I lose words. Anyway, it's... Stop saying nice things about me. But yeah, Suspice was so incredible to work with, and it was such an organic and welcoming experience to bounce ideas off of each other and watch these ideas sort of grow and spawn other ideas that, like, trickled their way into the story or sort of made their way at home into the backstory of this verse that may not have shown up in this story. But keep an eye on this space. There's gonna be continuing adventures within this verse, or I don't know if we can call it a verse because it's still within canon. Within this series, there will be additional stories, and some of them are pure delight, and some of them are a little heartbreaking, and some of them are just fucking porn. Anyway, yeah, Suspice's enthusiasm just, like, fed my enthusiasm for 2 months straight of, like, building this up, and we just sort of kept egging each other on in a way that felt, on my end, and hopefully it felt the same for Suspice, but, like, very... Like, it feeds your enthusiasm, so then you get more enthusiastic, and you put that back in, and you just sort of keep ramping it up and ratcheting it up to a point of, like, sublime joy. I don't know. It was a glorious exchange for several months. This project really has been, I guess for people listening down the line, this is currently August 2020, and we are several months into the COVID-19 pandemic in America. It has been longer for other countries. It has been a long time here, too. And this project has been such a welcome distraction, motivation, joy, creative outlet, a cathartic sobbing of terribleness in part 6. Like, I started sort of personal reflection time. I started COVID-19 with the idea that, like, I'm going to have a craft project, something that will exist because I was here and, like, showing my progress has been made and everything like that. And this story on the brainstorming end was, like, you know, spark and kindling, and it went so fast and so lively and so well. And then Suspice was writing it, and it was glorious for me to get to read it and sort of add my little commentary on the side of the G-Doc. And then it came time to record, and, like,
that was when I hit my stumbling block, I guess. It felt a little bit like everybody else already had this block at the beginning of quarantine, and I didn't, and now it's hitting now at the least helpful time, where you just sort of felt completely drained and, like, you know, non-motivated and just sort of... But having a partner who was so excited about this story and, like there were accountability emails involved, and knowing that someone else was as excited about seeing the final completed version of this and was, like, rooting for me to do my part of it as in a way that I sort of couldn't motivate myself at the time was really, really wonderful, and it felt so... If I can't do it for me, I can do it for her. It just, this wasn't here until we made it. And the story that Suspace told here about sort of, I've been pimping it to, you know, Podfic Twitter as like, Yaskier and Yennefer build the final side of the OT3 triangle together. And like, we are building a story that didn't exist, and they are building a relationship that didn't exist, and we're discussing people's vulnerabilities, and we're talking about people's deepest, darkest secrets, and we're finding commonality between, you know, people who didn't really necessarily have that kind of relationship on screen, but in the text they have a different... It was so good. It was so good. And I felt very supported and motivated the entire way through. Well, no, I didn't feel motivated the entire way through, but I felt externally supported the whole way through in a way that was lovely. Sorry, I had to wait for the sirens to go. The title for this fic actually comes from a quote in Blood of Elves, the novel. It goes, "You don't know," Yennefer repeated. "You, who usually know everything, and then sing about everything, even such intimate matters as someone else's feelings. I listened to your ballads beneath Blairby's dandelion. You dedicated a good few verses to me." "Poetry," he muttered, staring at the chicken. "Has its rights. No one should be offended." Because it's a 5-in-1. It's a good few verses of Yaskier and Yennefer's story. And it's an obvious nod to the songness of Yaskier. Plus, the actual quote is more about how he doesn't know her as well as he thinks he does, which is their whole journey of getting to know each other. It just fits so perfectly, and it was such a... I got to help find that and put that together, and it felt very rewarding. it was just like... We actually had a lot of really wonderful discussions about The Amazing Devil and several of their songs, because that was the soundtrack of my quarantine and the soundtrack of Suspace Quarantine, and also sort of like how in Bandom every other fic was either a Fallout Boy or a Panic song title. In the Witcher fandom, every other fic is a The Amazing Devil lyric as their fic title. And there was a lot of discussion about musicality and the best way to show that in this podfic. And I couldn't quite make it work the way I wanted it to, but the songs that were chosen will be available as a fan mix for this in a related work that you can check out at a later date. Also, check out the Amazing Devil's Live at Beachmast version of Marbles, because it is utterly heart-wrenching and raw and gutting and amazing and shaped very much the whole scene where Yennefer and Yaskier are talking about parents and parenting and sort of not looking for external sources to provide personal fulfillment and completion. Yeah, those two sort of, they're a whole-ass mood. Thank you to Suspace for humoring me about Yaskier's chest hair and the manhandling and Geralt has a type, because all of those things just felt so good seeing them elaborated and fully fleshed out in the text. And also getting to see Yennefer's more vulnerable side and how Yaskier sort of teaches her, like, you know, if she's going to weaponize her possessiveness because... Geralt is hers, and Yaskier is hers, and she's going to rescue them and keep them safe. And Yaskier is teaching her also that you can be vulnerable in a way that does not endanger yourself, or like you can be that kind of vulnerable in a way when you're safe with these people, and that it's okay to flay yourself open. And that line just like stuck with me. It was beautiful. And that kind of emotional vulnerability and that openness and that intimacy of trust, even more intimate than, you know, fucking, it was just so good for me. Also, Sospace's idea that, like, Yasker talks so much during sex that his partners think he doesn't need words, and then Yennefer notices, and then, like, basically weaponizes praise kink to the, you know, takes the dial and cranks it to 11, and just sort of the way it fits into Yasker's character, and also the way it fits into Yennefer's character, and then she shares it with Geralt, and then they share that all together, and Sospace wrote such good, it's hot, but it's also, like, character and examination and deeply metaphysical nonsense. I don't know. It was beautiful. I liked it a lot. The bit with the matching tattoos is a joy. It really is. There's so many glorious moments in this story that just really gave me incredible joy. And basically, I spent a significant portion of May, June, July shouting about this story to my roommates because they could not get away, and I did not stop talking about it. And so one night over dinner, I started telling my roommate about the outline for this story, but I kind of skipped over some stuff and just said, we're going to do a 5-in-1, and the last scene is going to be about Yennefer and Geralt drinking to deal with how they're immortals, and the only part of Yasker will live on as long as they do is the legacy of his songs. Someone's probably going to cry. And my roommate was like, wow, you've found someone who's as hurtful as you are. I hope you're happy together. And we were, because it really was so much pain in part 6. If you stop at part 5, you have a happily ever after and you don't have to deal with the pain. But like, the growth, the characters who were developed in OCs, but they feel like they're part of the world, and the slow thread of, like, Yasker's spy crafting, and, like, how that interacts with the world around them, and, like, the different, like, scopes of their interactions, but, like, the same kind of intensity of their impact upon the world around them, and just, it was a really incredible experience. I've said it like 4 times, I know, working with Sospace and getting to help direct this story in a little bit, because what came out of Sospace's brain is just so glorious to see and such a wonderful thing to experience as it flowed, and it just sort of took you on this journey of growth. And it felt so good to get to watch this happen in real time. And yeah, just on the back end of things, I hope the joy that we had bringing this story to life came through when you listened, because it just felt so alive and vibrant and like a perfect fitting cap to a decade of this challenge, and I could not have asked for a more enthusiastic partner who, like, threw down and threw everything on the wall, and you know what? I want to say 97% of it stuck, and the stuff that didn't stick is going to show up in another story anyway. Yeah. It was a wonderful experience, and I'm so glad that I did not scare Sospace off with my over-enthusiasm drive-by comment on AO3 that was sort of like, hey, things haven't been weird yet, let's make it weird. And then it didn't, and it was in fact beautiful. And I kind of got to spend quarantine with an extra friend, you know? So, time capsule moment, listening to this 10 years down the line. I also got to meet my 10-year podfic anniversary while we were working on this, and that just felt like very, very good. It's been wonderful. I'm so glad to have been a part of this, and I hope you enjoyed listening. Thank you to my incredible partner, and thank you to the Pod Together mods for running this again, and thank you for listening. I just said that. It's 2 in the morning. Fuck. Have a nice day.